Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, the hacker maker, Philip Wiley. This episode, I'm happy to bring Nader Zavari onto the show. We've been connected through social media, and he was gracious enough to take time out of his schedule to join us today. So welcome to the show, Nader.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be on here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So how is your new year going so far?
Never a dull moment. It's always something new with where I'm working at with Mandiant and Google being part of the incident response team. So there's always some new threat actor trying to attack a application or a go after a victim. So never a dull moment, which just makes my job and my life always fun.
Yeah, companies may lay off, but the threat actors never stop.
Exactly. Yep.
So why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and kind of share your background, how you got started?
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Nader Zavari. I am a senior manager with Mandiant. Now we're part of Google Cloud as an incident response and remediation consultant. What that means is usually when an organization is breached, they call an incident response firm, which is Mandiant, and we come in and try to assess what happened, try to figure out the storyline of attack. How did the attacker got in the environment? What happened? Was there any additional data access? Did the data was the data exfiltrated? How was the attacker able to maneuver through the environment? And so we help try to paint the entire picture for the organization. And really with my team as well, we try to help contain, remediate, and kind of kick out the bad guys during an actual live incident. So I have about 15 years experience. So before getting into Mandiant, which I've been part of Mandiant for about 4.5 years now, I started my career at a very kind of traditional IT route in my cybersecurity career. I was your traditional kind of help desk, desktop engineer, where, you know, because we're talking, I'm aging myself a little bit. There was no kind of considered cybersecurity department. If you look about 15 years ago, it was, you know, everyone wore multiple hats, and at that one of those hats had to be security. And one of the things that I've always, when I was in help desk and desktop, that kind of helped propel me into the cybersecurity or the security realm was throughout my journey in help desk and in desktop, I always had kind of a security mindset. So, you know, I started desktop and help desk, and I went to system admin, system engineering, went into then being like an architect, an Active Directory architect. And finally, when cybersecurity started getting a little bit more buzz, they created a separate department, which, because I've always been very security focused mindset, I was one of the first people to be kind of volunteered for that job. That thrusted me into the whole cybersecurity, where security is what I ate, drank, and slept. And what happened after that is stayed at that organization and then got plucked up by the Big Four into consulting. So I was at a Big Four consulting for about 3 years, and then the last 4.5 years here. So altogether about 15 years of experience.
Very cool. So what kind of drew you into the incident response side of things?
So incident response has always been, you know, what I've always viewed as, you know, the end game, because throughout my time, I worked in multiple domains. So if you think of like the CISP domains. I've worked in multiple domains, identity and security monitoring. And also when I was in consulting, I was doing a lot around risk management, things like that. And also part of the pen testing, so ethical hacking teams. So when I was doing that, you know, I always had an affinity for the blue teaming side, even when I was part of the red teaming pen testing team, knowing that when I am invoking this Mimikatz, when I am performing these types of commands, what are some capabilities from a logging standpoint? Can Sysmon or some event logs capture this? If so, what are the triggers? What are the thresholds that would probably allow it to alert? So I've always kind of been very blue team focused. So then getting into incident response was just the perfect culmination, I felt like, where I can not only perform incident response and investigation and forensics, but also a lot of times we do proactive assessments. So we take our knowledge from the incident response cases, maybe some new novel way we're seeing, and then just shoehorn that straight into other organizations that want or do not want to be breached and try to help secure them as well.
Yeah, that's a very interesting path. And one of the things I would share, because I used to teach ethical hacking and web app pen testing for Dallas College. And anyone who's interested, I tell you, even if you don't want to be on the red team side, you don't want to be a pen tester, understanding that knowledge is going to help you be a better defender. And so you're kind of a testament to that.
Yeah, definitely. Because when we're seeing just forensic artifacts, because of our knowledge of pen testing, we can say, okay, yeah, they invoked this specific tool, and that will help us then start looking for other TTPs, so tools, techniques, and tactics and procedures that a threat actor would use. So definitely, I would say a great incident response consultant are also very good at red teaming. Actually, one of the best ones that we have on our teams are those who can, you know, sometimes run and do testing on their own environment to say, hey, is this really what triggered it? And they'll do like a red teaming exercise in a whole lab environment to see if what we're seeing from the organization, from the victim organization in terms of forensic artifacts, is what we're thinking happened.
So what are some other areas that if someone's interested in getting into incident response, that's good background to have, a good place to pivot from per se?
Yeah, some good places is like infrastructure, right? So cloud security infrastructure. So if you are in help desk and if you're working in Active Directory or system admin, and Active Directory is almost every IR has some form of Active Directory component. Maybe it might be a total breach of Active Directory where the threat actor was able to get domain admin, or some form of breach of Active Directory because of identities sometimes all culminating through Active Directory groups and things like that with SSO. So even if you are part of, you know, an organization, being a system admin, knowing Active Directory, knowing these fundamental networking principles, where these fundamental networking principles then allow you to better understand what's happening on the other side. Because really, you can't defend something you don't know how it works, right? And so as being part of the operations, knowing being part of IT that maybe not into cybersecurity just yet, you're understanding the operational aspects of how these technologies work, which then allows you to help defend and also help gather forensics. Because you know what a normal operation will look like, versus if somebody who is just doing forensics on a system that they have no idea what's happening, it just makes it a lot more difficult.
So would you say like a SOC analyst would be a good position to pivot from, the experience that you get as a SOC analyst?
Yeah, definitely. I would say the easiest position probably to pivot from is the SOC analyst, where your traditional red teaming, especially certain MSSPs, if you have a capability of getting part of them, is, you know, you're able to see the investigation process, the triaging process. And then, you know, depending on your organization, you may be able to also get into endpoint review of it. So definitely starting from a SOC or SOC analyst level one is a perfect gateway into possibly getting into becoming an incident responder. It's definitely a lot of times when we get our new incident response people, they are people who have been SOC analysts or SOC engineers for years and making that transition into incident response.
Yeah, something else I know there's you hear a lot about these days is threat hunters. Is that kind of part of incident response?
So not from an incident response, but definitely SOC analysts. So a more mature organization would be it would not only take you when you're doing SOC, you're just, you know, you're responding to alerts that are happening. What threat hunting is, you'd then take it into the offensive where you're proactively looking like, okay, this is a threat profile for this threat actor that we know targets our industry and our type of organization, our size of organization, our industry, our vertical. We are now going to take the TTPs associated, the tools, techniques, and procedures associated with this threat actor, and now we're going to try to run across our environment to see if one, we could gather anything. This is where the purple team comes in, where the red team meets the blue team, and where you can create threat hunting exercises to see, are we able to catch these specific loggings? At what level can we catch it, right? Because at the end of the day, you can put in all the defenses. It's just a matter of putting all the level of defenses, but still the thing is to try to catch and quickly catch the threat actor during their process and be able to block, right, as many pathways as possible until the point that after you block so many pathways, they stumble upon a new pathway that then will trigger an alert already that they can't go further because that's not blocked, but you are alerted right away.
So what advice would you have for someone that's wanting to get into the industry, wanting whether it's IR or some other areas of cybersecurity?
So one of the things, I do a lot of work with mentorship programs with Blacks in Cyber, Women in Cyber, and also some mentorship programs within the greater kind of Houston community. And when I am talking with folks, there's a lot of transferable skills that are there within your general job that's maybe not even an IT job that can transfer into a cyber realm, right? The customer facing skill set, the ability to quickly analyze events that are happening. But also, even if you're going from a traditional technology role, you could be just a traditional network analyst and wanting to get into cyber. You know, there's certain, you know, certifications you probably want to take, right? That will allow you that you may not have the enterprise experience, but you can show to recruiters and to hiring managers that you do have the foundations and fundamental principles that are associated with the role that you're trying to go for. So really there's a lot of transferable skills as well as, you know, I'm big on a lot of CompTIA certifications. I know a lot of times a lot of people like to poo-poo them a lot. I feel like they are a great vendor agnostic capability with, you know, just getting started. Like I know a lot of people who went from being petroleum engineer into cybersecurity and within a few months went from petroleum engineering, getting laid off from being a petroleum engineer, and then within a few months, getting A plus, getting security plus, getting the then, you know, CISA plus and all that, the different types of certifications, which then allowed them to land a SOC analyst position, right? And so those are all different ways that I feel like somebody can help get their foot in the door. And one thing is definitely never sell yourself short, for sure.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. With some people underrating the CompTIA certifications. I mean, they're good certs. When I was teaching at Dallas College, when I started out, I was using George Weidman's book on pen testing. And that spring, I guess the beta for the Pen Test Plus come out. And I started reviewing the content, watched the Train the Trainer videos, and then just kind of looking at some of the Security Plus stuff and seeing how they introduce you to some of those concepts before you get into that specialization is really good. And as you mentioned, vendor neutral, it's not someone's course teaching you on, you know, their slant or their flavor of operating system firewalls or whatever. It's vendor neutral and relevant to the industry.
Yep, definitely. I would always have actually, I was just asked this question yesterday on LinkedIn. I have a niece, they're trying to get started in cybersecurity. Is a Google cert, so I work for Google, is a Google cert a great way to start off? And, you know, I'm part of Google, but I would tell you, let's first start with some of the vendor agnostic certs. which then allows you, like even CEH as well, which then can allow you to see, especially like Security Plus, which really gives you a pretty good understanding, a breadth of what is cybersecurity from the fundamental principles and from the various different domains. And then from there, you'll be able to tackle which one you are really interested in, and then kind of dive in deep afterwards. So, you know, coming in with very vendor agnostic type of certifications, and then moving on to, once you find something that you are really looking for, you go for a more vendor specific, a more specialized type of cert.
So is there any good IR training out there that you'd recommend for someone?
If you have the capability, I would always recommend SANS as a GCIH, GCFA. Those are amazing certifications, very pricey. So I understand it's not for everyone. If you're able to get part of the program, they have a program for, you know, student program, or if you have your organization be able to pay for it, that is something that I would always recommend. But in general, there are some really great kind of open source tools where you have vulnerable by design type of things, or something like flaws.cloud. So if you're trying to get into cloud, there's a thing called flaws.cloud that was made by Scott Piper, which is a vulnerable cloud platform. And then there's great YouTube videos out there that walk through that and kind of show you the incident response capabilities of what's happening, the forensics that happen for, let's say, a compromised S3 bucket or something like that. But really, another thing I would say is EC Council has a great certification around incident handling. That gives you great kind of very fundamental concepts and gets you into a little bit of the incident response capability, but also CISA, CYSA Plus from CompTIA. That does really good with network forensics. They'll have you take a packet and throw in a Wireshark, and you have to then analyze the packet, exactly what's happening. So I would say those are kind of the big ones that are kind of right out the bat, especially for beginning people.
And to kind of further the conversation on education, do you think a degree is required for someone that wants to get into cybersecurity?
Yeah, it's definitely not required, especially because a lot of colleges do not have a cybersecurity program yet. They have maybe a master's program, but not a bachelor's or something like that. And that's one of the great things is you supplement the lack of a bachelor's degree, which I'm not one to go against college. I went to college. The experience you get from college is unseen, that you can find that replicated anywhere, but it's not needed for a cybersecurity pathway. But what you want to do is, if you don't have the college degree or the master's or the bachelor's of cybersecurity, you can supplement that with certifications and with experience, especially with certifications that, if you don't have the experience yet because you're trying to get the foot in the door, certifications will kind of get, it'll help you get through that initial HR process, right? Once you get in the initial HR process, it's just a matter of you being able to showcase your knowledge and skill sets to the hiring manager.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how that whole industry with, as far as, you know, college degrees, because, you know, everyone, only thing available for the longest time was just master's degree, and it was in assurance, and it was just kind of, you know, there's not that much out there. It's getting better, but, you know, just like you said, there's just kind of a scarcity of college courses on that.
Yeah, and there's actually a few places that I know that go full on bachelor's degree, full 4 year. I stay in Houston, Texas, so there's one right here really close to my house where they have a full-on bachelor's degree program at a community college, actually. So it's not pricey. It's very affordable. And I'm looking at just the classes they're going through, and I'm like, wow, I wish I had this when I went to college. Of course, when I went to college, it was like computer information systems, or in computer science, were like the closest thing to an IT degree you could get. And I'm so happy that now they're starting to shift that. Cybersecurity is here to stay, and now we need to create programs and pathways within college to help add new skilled workers into the workforce.
As far as skills go, do you think it's required for people wanting to get in to the industry to have coding experience, whether it's programming or scripting? Do you think that's needed?
It's not needed. Definitely not needed. Heck, I'm not a great coder or scripter. I can tell you right now, I can do commandlets. So I can do commands, which is one to two lines. I can put that together. But full on, hey, write me a code or application. That's something that I myself, and I know my limitations. So I know myself, I'm not great at it. And it's not needed for every position. Now, if you do have that, that is an amazing skill set, especially Python and Go, where these are languages that are constantly being used by, if you want to get into red teaming, if you want to get into doing data analysis to help with data analysis. So a lot of times we got some interns in last year who were great at coding. They're getting into their cybersecurity and they were great at Python coding, which then we wanted to utilize their skill sets to help with our own data analysis that we're doing. So we got them on board and helped them with data analysis. So that is definitely a skill set that is a major bonus to have, but not a requirement, especially with the vast avenues of things that are around within the domains of cyber.
What do you think about ChatGPT? I mean, I know a lot of people in the security world has been playing around with it. Do you see it being helpful in our IR realm?
I haven't seen it used in the IR realm, in all honesty, but I've seen it used like in the red teaming, creating malware, which they kind of stopped doing that, but also creating an entire like phishing campaign, creating a C2. So it's amazing, right? And you know, this is just another thing that defenders have to get ahead of. Because now your misspelling of some of Nigerian prince's email is now not going to be misspelled anymore. It's going to be very realistic, very believable. And now phishings are going to be a lot more crafted, more neatly and more concise, where, you know, the chances of your average Joe being able to click on that is probably going to be a lot more likely. And that's where we as defenders have to kind of increase our capabilities to block something like that.
Yeah, that's a great point, because typically the phishing emails and stuff you see, it's pretty easy to figure out. It's not from your bank. And so, I agree with that changing and people, you know, trying to make it look like a realistic email from the company as well.
Yeah. So there's a great video from H Bomber guy, who's on YouTube. Where they talks about the Nigerian prince emails. And he said, they're misspelling it on purpose, because knowing that if you can catch the misspelling, you're probably not going to be the ones to be giving them money. So they are creating and crafting their emails for just their target audience. Because if you are willing to go through and sit through that thing and have any sort of like, okay, maybe just let me click this link, then you are already part of their target audience to possibly scam in the future, right? Versus if you're catching it, like, okay, then you are not their intended audience. They already know that. They know that they're going to get filtered by X amount of people. And it's just their mentality of creating and crafting it so bad that the people who are going to click on it are a lot higher chance for them to actually pursue some sort of scam.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting way to look at it. And from a percentage basis, you know, you don't have to be 100% all the time. It just takes a few victims.
Yeah, and that's kind of with us being defenders, right? We're defending everything, and then all the threat actor needs is that one hole in your environment to get their to get in and then be able to maneuver and laterally move and then possibly privilege escalate and be able to compromise the entire environment.
Yeah. And speaking of the phishing and stuff, you know, it still remains, it seems like, one of the easiest paths in, because people can have really good endpoint protection, have everything going right, but all it takes is someone to click on the wrong email and threat actor has access.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still one of the top ways that we see, clients get compromised. Actually, the past 2 years, we've actually seen a downturn, not a downturn, but an uptick for vulnerabilities being the initial access capability for a threat actor to come in. So a vulnerable application, a vulnerable system being the initial access for a threat actor to come in, as opposed to your phishing. So maybe all that phishing training we're going through is working. A lot of the email protections that are happening is getting better. But with ChatGPT, now the data is still yet to be seen on how does that change the game.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the interesting things is just like see that the people are just kind of having to see now that with the use of ChatGPT is making sure they're not putting in sensitive data into ChatGPT, you know, because that's not good feeding it. Yeah.
Yeah. People actually feed it straight data and then create like data analysis. So I feel like, you know, I'm not one, as I said, I'm not great in coding and I'm not great at Excel. I'm okay with Excel, but when it gets to the higher forms of Excel, you know, creating, asking it to create Excel equations and things like that. But then I'm seeing people actually put in their entire data set and then have ChatGPT perform the analysis, which is, you know, if it's sensitive data, that's something that you probably do not want happening.
Yeah, I agree. So we're getting down towards the end of the show. Is there any advice you'd like to share before we end this episode?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think overall, if you are starting your career in cybersecurity or trying to think about starting a career in cybersecurity, one of the things you have to just understand is there is a shortage of cybersecurity professionals. The work is out there. It's just a matter of how can you help create and craft your career path to able to achieve that type of work. And cybersecurity itself is just a vast field. There's so many domains and subdomains. Not everything has to be hacking and ethical hacking, which I know it's a sexy part, right? Everyone looks at, you know, Mr. Robot and all these movies and it's sexy work. But there's a lot of other kind of unsung heroes within cybersecurity that may not get the shine, that there are other pathways that are not as, let's say, as treacherous, that are not that competitive, that are, you know, just out there. It's just a matter of you to be able to find it and create your plan, your career path to be able to capture that type of degree and career.
Some great advice there. And it's just one of the things too, that glad to hear you mention that, because so many people trying to get in the industry only know about the
red
hacking
team
part of things.
Yeah.
That's all they know about. So I think, as an industry, we need to communicate more those other type of roles, because some of those other roles are pretty cool. I mean, it's, you know, threat hunting sounds interesting, mm-hmm. incident response. There's a lot of interesting areas in that. And sometimes when you think it's all Mr. Robot and James Bond kind of stuff, it's not when it comes to red teaming, when you're having to go through and validate SSL and TLS related vulnerabilities, that's...
And it's not always sexy, because sometimes you just put in your application and let it run, and now you're just sitting around twiddling your thumbs when your tool is running. So it's not as sexy as it comes off, right? And you know, one thing is being from the red teaming life and then getting into incident response, I'm like, I love incident response, because especially with Mandiant being the foremost leader of incident response, there's not a major incident that it gets hit in the newswire. 70-80% of the time, it's us investigating. So we are in the know of the latest threats and the trends that are happening, which then after we're done with our IRs, we then say, hey, here's a new way we saw these threat actors exploit this system. We then send that to the red teamers and help them craft new ways and methodologies. So it's always, there's, like I said, it's a vast array of things within cyber, and it's not just red teaming. It's risk management. It's vulnerability management. It's a threat hunting. It's SOC analysts. It's many different things, even infrastructure security and cloud security. There's a lot of different avenues within in the cybersecurity realm. And it's not just, hey, let me just go ethical hacking.
Some good points, and sometimes some of the other roles like SOC analyst are easier to get into compared to red team or pen testing.
Yep, definitely. I would say SOC analyst, it would be a great role, because if you even go out, I mean, you won't see a lot of junior pen testers out there when you look at the job descriptions. They want seasoned pen testers. You know, there's what I want to look at is, you know, a lot of times you'll see like SOC analyst one, things like that. That'll be a great way to get your foot in the door and just be able to eat and breathe cybersecurity as your day job. And then, of course, you know, continue with your hack the box and continue with the try hack me's and continue with your vuln DBs and the very different various different Hack the Box types of platforms out there to continue your education while still enhancing your blue team knowledge, because your blue team knowledge and your red team knowledge will oscillate and it will help one another out. It's never something that just because you know something on the blue team that means it means nothing to a red teamer.
Very good advice. I appreciate you joining. Thanks a lot. It was great to hear more about your story, and I am sure that the listeners will get a lot of good out of the advice that you shared with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you in the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.